and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Southern California. A second atmospheric river leaves at least three dead as some areas receive as much as 10 inches of rain. CBS's Elise
Outside
Preston.
Outside in Sacramento, an uprooted tree from Elizabeth Marinoble's front yard crushed her car.
And then the wind was just breaking the branches like toothpicks.
Torrential rain from back-to-back atmospheric rivers has led to widespread flooding as roads turn to rivers, forcing rescues throughout California.
CBS's Ian Lee in London reports that King Charles has cancer and Buckingham Palace won't say what kind
it
is.
In a statement said the cancer is not related to the monarch's recent treatment for a benign prostate condition. The palace said during that treatment, a separate issue of concern was noted and diagnostic tests revealed a form of cancer. The statement went on to say the 75-year-old king has started treatment, during which time he has been advised by doctors to postpone public-facing duties.
The Senate unveils a $118 billion border security and foreign aid deal. CBS's Camilo Montoya Galvez in Eagle Pass, Texas.
This proposal would mark a dramatic and seismic shift here at the U.S.-Mexico border. Migrants would be quickly returned across the Rio Grande here into Mexico when illegal crossings spike here. The president would gain a sweeping authority, Caitlin, to effectively shut down asylum processing in between the ports of entry.
Central Command says U.S. forces have conducted a strike in self-defense against two Houthi explosive uncrewed surface vehicles in Yemen. It comes after an overnight drone strike on a military base in Syria that houses U.S. troops that killed six Kurdish fighters. CBS's David Martin.
Responsibility for the attack has been claimed by the Islamic Resistance, which is the umbrella group for all of the militias in Iraq and Syria that have been attacking U.S. troop locations.
It's the first major assault on U.S. troops in Syria since the U.S. launched retaliatory strikes on Friday. Massive forest fires in central Chile have killed more than 120 people and left over 1,600 without homes. Reporter Ricardo Nanning in Santiago says many people trying to flee the Valparaiso region were overcome by flames.
There was a big traffic jam, so the authorities have found a lot of bodies trapped inside the cars, also in the streets. Now the efforts are trying to identify those bodies.
The latest setback for Boeing, potential delivery delays of the 737 MAX after a Boeing official says improperly drilled holes were found on some 50 aircraft by fuselage provider Spirit AeroSystems. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A Wisconsin man convicted of pepper spraying police officers during the January 6th attack of the U.S. Capitol argues he should get a shorter sentence. Federal prosecutors say 41 months in prison is appropriate, but lawyers for Riley Casper of Pulaski says he's matured over these last 3 years. Casper is set to be sentenced on Tuesday. Democratic presidential primary voters in Wisconsin will have a choice after the state Supreme Court Friday ordered Dean Phillips' name to appear on the April ballot. Phillips says the justices made the right call for democracy.
It's so much less about my campaign and just so much more about how we Americans practice democracy and whether we should allow our two big parties to suppress it.
Phillips on WISN-TV's Up Front. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
The Bucks lose in Utah. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks lost to the Jazz 123-108. Doc Rivers says the team found open shots. They just couldn't score against the Jazz.
I thought when they went big early, we rushed. That's why I called the timeout. So guys, just settle down. We're going to get every shot we want. And we did. We just couldn't make any of them. And the more we missed, the bigger they got.
The Bucks take on the Suns in Phoenix tomorrow night. Men's college basketball. Wisconsin loses to Purdue 75-69 before a sold-out audience at the Kohl Center. Greg Gardner. hard on coming up short again to the number two ranked Boilermakers.
Competition at its highest level is very rewarding. It can be very painful, as today is, but it's rewarding. And now, you know, we got to get better before we get to mid-March and see them again.
NFL Packers defensive coaching staff has been told they are free to interview with other teams after hiring a new defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley. So defensive line coach Jerry Montgomery, who's been with the team since 2015, will interview with the New England Patriots. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy with some areas of fog tonight and lows in the upper 20s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds and possible record highs tomorrow in the low 50s. And staying around 50, mostly cloudy and breezy Wednesday. A pattern shift coming for the end of the week. Rain Thursday into Friday, followed by colder temps. Current temp is 30.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, Henry Cutter gave me.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, Chuzhunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
You are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Support. Thank you for the round of applause. Support your favorite radio host on Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon.
Or your favorite Native whore, as you were.
Yeah, I guess. It almost sounded like that. Hosts. Yeah. Plural. Hosts. Thank you very much.
Yeah, hey, a lot going on. Well, before we get into this groovy thing happening on the 13th, I just want to give everyone a big shout out. Great powwow this last weekend at Shakopee. Saw a lot of people that listened to the show, and just want to give a big shout out to them. Great event, and there was other events going on around the area. And before you talk about that, Haley, just want to give a quick shout out to State Representative Heather Keeler, who had a nice little meeting and fundraiser. Here in in Maplewood, and we got the chat with the Lieutenant Governor, who is, it's always fun to chat with her, and great to see her. And Haley, you made it out there too.
I did. Yes, I would. Had a lovely time coming out and supporting Heather Keeler, and shout out to Jamie Becker Finn, because she had the fundraiser out at Mukwa Coffee, which is Jamie's coffee shop, and Jamie was there as well.
Yeah, schlepping coffee. That was awesome.
Yeah, like a true barista.
That's right. And then I was like grabbing the free little pizza squares, which is so un-New Yorkish, but I guess it's really big Minnesota. Have pizza and squares. I guess you can feed more people that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I wonder if that was the good old Carboni's.
No, they sell it there. They do. I've had it there, as a matter of fact. Hey,
good.
It is. It was really good. I kept gobbling away and asking for more. Hey, there's a couple of things going on here. I just, before we get to that, want to do a big shout out for all our Patreon listeners that give us a little money here every month. You really helped us through the COVID and really helped support us, and really appreciate all you guys out there doing that. And we can tell people to their face, Haley, we got something coming up here on the 13th here in the Twin Cities.
We sure do. So we know, AM 950 is our mothership station here in the Twin Cities. And February is AM 950 Listener Appreciation Month. So we'll be doing a radio listener appreciation event next Tuesday, February 13th at the Park Tavern in St. Louis Park from 6 to 8 p.m. Come out, have some drinks, appetizers with us, and support your local progressive radio station and some of our cool coworkers.
Not all of our cool coworkers, but some of them. Oh, just kidding.
Well, we'll be there, so it'll be cool.
Yes, yes, totally. And maybe we'll bring some shirts for sale, too. I don't know. We'll have to figure out if we're the producer's schlepping hoodies and T-shirts out there or not. So,
well, hey, I did learn how to use the Square thing to charge people. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, learning something every day.
Well, you're getting ready for the fair with our store. So, you know, you'll be out there working with us and signing autographs. And we'll probably do the radio show out there again like we did 2 years ago. That was a lot of fun. And we ran into a lot of people. We want to give a big thanks to our listening audience, and we've gotten some responses sent to us via email that there was 20 people that went out to the Lover's Art Market in St. Paul yesterday that heard specifically here on the show and Haley's report on what's going on in the weekend, and we just want to give you guys a shout-out, one, for going, and two, for mentioning Native Roots Radio, Haley.
Yeah, thanks to everyone that went out there in St. Paul and supported Indigenous artists. And I love when there's big crowds out there at our markets, because we know a lot of those vendors, and they're just really great people and truly amazing artists.
Wow, that's very cool. That's very cool. We've got to give a quick shout out to Dr. Hackett, who always listens to our show, too. Really, she's one of our best informative guests, and we just want to give her a big shout out, too, and her support over the years of Native Roots Radio. But, you know, Haley, there was years ago when we first started the show, Wendy and I, and we were on once a week, there was people that wanted to advertise with us that didn't follow or fall into our way of thinking and what we believed in, and we had to say no thank you but thanks. And good to say that Dr. Hackett and Howling for Wolves is somebody that we fall in line with and support and always have, and it's great to have the support back and forth. And I know she listens to our show a lot, so I just want to say a big peeny geegy thank you very much.
Yeah, well, Dr. Hackett is just amazing in the way that she advocates for these animals, and these are wolf species here, specifically in Minnesota, is just amazing. And I just wish we had more organizations like Howling for Wolves that were advocating.
Every time I hear Howling for Wolves, they go, woo.
Get your howl on. But these beautiful animals out there, and, you know, we just got to keep talking about those wolf hunts and keep it at the forefront of our legislators' minds.
Yeah, definitely. And keep talking about it here, because not always do we align with our government, too. We have a lot of, and, you know, one of the things, too, that I was down in Minneapolis talking to our friends at Native American Community Development Institute, your friend Alex, and we were talking a lot about what's happening now in the election and all the misinformation out there and how frightening it can be with AI and where Gen Zers like yourself get the news. And I know it's a double-edged sword, because I know you don't watch national news, and then watching national news and corporate news is not good either, because it's so one-sided and visually. I got a quick story, Haley. So
yeah.
Years ago, President Reagan, now that we're talking the 80s here, there was a thing called, what was that? Iran-Contra. And that was where secretly the Reagan institution was, or the Reagan presidency was giving arms to people, and Oliver North got involved. Long story short, my point was, they were reporting all these things about the president, and on TV they were showing him come off the plane, wave to people, and smile. So visually, people really didn't hear the story about him. What they saw was a happy, successful president. And there's all these subliminal things that go on in the news that I know you studied when you were in college, but I see as an old person all the time where it's like, what the heck is going on here, you know? I always tell that story about that big protest on Lake Street and Marshall here in St. Paul for Dakota Access Pipeline. And the local news had a chopper up there. I'm going, great, they're going to show all the people here and all the young, because it was a student-run protest, and have them all show up and look. Mm-hmm. And what did Channel 4 News do here in Minnesota? They showed half the crowd. Instead of saying thousands of people were on the bridge, they said hundreds. And things like that just bug me. So thank goodness for Progressive Radio, AM 950, Civic Media Network that we're on, and all the other stations we're on Turtle Island. So we just got to say a big peenie-geegee. Thank you. We're going to have Dr. Stately on next. And this is going to be a rocking week, Haley.
Always is.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by. Stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence. And shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Life can be hectic. Sometimes the pressure can feel like too much, and the emotions can be overwhelming. Hennepin County's COPE Mobile Crisis Response is here to listen and help you find a way through whatever is going on in your life. Call 612-596-1223 for no-cost crisis support anytime, anywhere in Hennepin County. That number is 612-596-1223. Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. We have families waiting for a car. You know, over 85% of unemployed are successful in finding and keeping a job if they have dependable transportation. A car plus a job equals a life changed. 612-919-5526. We have families waiting for a car. 919-5526 or autotech.org.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Yes, they do. And speak of honoring, we have Dr. Stately here, who is president and CEO of Native American Community Clinic here. And I almost went there to, nowhere land there for a second. Welcome, Dr. Stately. Great to see you. You're looking good.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So you've been walking? You look like you've lost some weight since last time I talked to you.
I do.
Yeah.
Maybe a pound or here, a pound or two here or there.
Well,
yeah. I've been watching my diet a little bit I have been walking actually. I think I told you that I'm going to Scotland next month for a conference.
Ooh.
No, you didn't tell us.
Oh, really? No. Yeah. I'm going to Scotland with a group of with the research team that NAC worked on this. We did a cultural adaptation of a smoking cessation app. Oh. And we indigenized it and got some really good results in our pilot. So we're we submitted a paper and it got selected, and I think we're one of either only one or two of indigenous focused presentations. So kind of cool. It's kind of exciting.
Wow, that is awesome. Are we getting a news break, or have you been on NPR lately?
Neither.
I guess we broke it here. That's awesome.
You're not getting a news break, and I haven't been on NPR. I think I was on like a few weeks ago. I can't remember when. Melissa Olson interviewed me for the encampment thing.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah, well.
Yeah, you know, I talked to her for a whole hour, and I only got like two lines.
Well, here you talk a whole hour and everybody gets it, and we're really happy to have you on pretty much every week here, and appreciate what you do for the community. It was an interesting weekend, and just to back up what you were saying there, I know again one of the camps was moved again, and where are our relatives going? And this has gotten to be kind of a sickening dance that we go through and our relatives go through.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think the challenging part of all of that is that city, county, and state leadership have not yet found a solution to this problem. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that Minnesota is the only one going through the problem, or even the Twin Cities. I mean, we have colleagues and partners in Seattle, and last time I was in Los Angeles, I was shocked at how many houseless people were there. Like, you know, I lived there for 25 years, and I had never seen that many people living houseless the last time I was there.
Absolutely.
So I know it's not that we're alone, but I think what's frustrating is, you know, and I mentioned this, I think, I forget what the context was, but I was in a group of with a number of, you know, governmental leadership, and then also some colleagues of mine in the Twin Cities. We were in a conversation and we're talking about the issues around the camp. And I think one of the things I said was, when I just kind of said, I want to weigh in on here, on this conversation here. And when I, about a year or so after I started at NAC, the first, my first experience in this work was specifically within the response that NAC had with, and our partners, our community partners, to the Wall of Forgotten Natives, which is just three blocks to our east, right? Easily the largest encampment that Minnesota has ever seen in its history. Bar the removal of Native people and the forced march of Dakota people, probably is the only one that's possibly larger. But I think one of the things that was demonstrable in that experience and in working boots on the ground, we were able to, like I said in this meeting, I said, I want you all to remember where we were in 2018. Granted, there was another day and time, and yes, some things are different now. It was before the pandemic, so there were a few other things that sort of like are different now than was true in 2018. But we were able, across multiple jurisdictions, so across Hennepin County, the city of Minneapolis, state of Minnesota, multiple jurisdictions, multiple enterprises within those jurisdictions, and community and private philanthropy and a few other, a lot of other partners, able to come together, tribal, right? Red Lake Nation gave up their land and where they built their new building recently in the last couple of years, and they put up a navigation center. They put up the space and they supported it. And I think one of the challenges is that, like, you know, we have this lived experience of being able to do a very amazing job of housing our relatives within a very short period of time in late 2018, leading up into the winter of 2018, 2019. We housed over 400 and some people, and another 100 or so, a couple hundred or 200, 300 went We lived in the Navigation Center for through the winter, and then we were able to get housed in the spring before the Navigation Center was dismantled. Mm-hmm. So we have a model by which we were able to work strategically and collectively and collaboratively on sort of moving this this problem forward and finding some solutions fairly rapidly to do that. And then in the pandemic, we were able to sort of like, you know, literally manufacture, you know, ridiculous amounts of cash to solve problems on a worldwide global crisis because we had to, because people's lives were being threatened, right? And so we have, I always tell people, like, this is not an issue of money. This is not an issue of actually there being enough money. We already know that, like, when something's been deemed important enough and prioritized enough, and the folks, I guess, quote unquote, the people who are receiving the services are valuable enough, we can actually move heaven and earth to save people's lives and to do what we need to do to make people safe. So we know it's possible. We've seen it done a couple of times. I think the challenge has been is that, like, it is, you know, I think some of it is due to political will, people being able to come to some consensus and understanding together. I think it's also, you know, the scale of the problem is so huge. Like, we have across the globe, not just here in the Twin Cities, but across the globe, we have the most unhoused people we have ever seen in my lifetime, right? Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was like, I remember being homeless, but I had my parents, I, you know, within South Minneapolis, I had all my relatives living near me. You know, it wasn't unusual for my mom and my siblings and I to, like, go from one family's home to another, like, you know, as she was trying to get stable. And she was a single mother raising seven children on welfare, AFDC at the time. But we had this safety net that existed in our community, and that safety net has eroded over time. It's really, you know, that process is a direct result of strategic policies and processes that link right back to colonization and failed assimilation policies over the last several decades that have eroded our family and our communities. And so there isn't any place to go, actually. There's no, you know, you don't have relatives nearby that can help you. We have, you know, poverty and, you know, unaffordable housing at record numbers than we've ever seen before. So the solution to the problem is large. But the solution is not moving an encampment from one location to another repeatedly over weeks and weeks and weeks, right, and forcing people to move. They lose their stuff. They lose their contact with people like us who provide services to them, and we kind of remanufacture and recreate the thing all over again. It's really challenging.
Yeah, it is, and it isn't like you know, we count, you know, couch jumping too as homeless too, even though they are maybe friends and relatives are helping them. We talk a little bit when we come back from break on what can we do, what solutions are there, what can the tribes do, and, you know, that's a thing that I'm curious about from my other job too, because not always throwing money at it is the solution either. But go ahead.
No, I think by itself and in and of itself, by itself, it's not the solution, right? It's not
right.
You know, I mean, the legislature passed its most largest and most historic housing bill ever in state history last year. But it's going to take a while before that money comes down into community.
Well, and I was going to say, too, we're going to take a quick break here, but one thing I wanted to touch on, and maybe we can talk a little bit about next segment, and is if the economy's going well, it always trickles down late to the BIPOC people and talk a little bit about that next, because things are still dire and there's still a lot of recovery needs to happen here in our BIPOC community and especially our Native community. Hey, we're here with Dr. Stately, President and Executive Officer of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. We'll be right back after this short break.
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
CBS News Brief. At least three people have died in California after a second atmospheric river drops over 10 inches of rain in areas including LA's Beverly Crest neighborhood, where this man heard a home ripped off of its foundation.
It was like thunder, like, and then the sound of trees, I thought, snapping like twigs. And it was just this house, just completely disintegrating.
King Charles has been diagnosed with a form of cancer unrelated to his prostate procedure, the BBC's Mark Easton.
He will have his weekly meeting with the Prime Minister. He will attend, or at least be in attendance at Privy Council meetings and so on.
But no public appearances. U.S. senators unveil a $118 billion bipartisan border and foreign aid deal, CBS's Scott McFarland.
In the U.S. House, Trump's most ardent supporters control what can be considered and what can't be. It's one thing to oppose this bill. It's another to have the capacity to block it, which Republicans in the U.S. House do.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehoe. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Gray wolves will stay under federal endangered species protections. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says it's going to focus on a national wolf strategy plan. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says that means the state's wolf management plan will stay the same. It bans wolf hunting until the population in Wisconsin is well over 1,000. February is Black History Month. Black leaders in Wisconsin say the fight for equality is as relevant as ever.
All these years later, in 2024, that we've got people who are trying to undermine efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion to lift people up who've had challenges trying to live out that simple American dream.
Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson on Civic Media's Earl Ingram Show. I'm Nate Wiggehoe, Civic Media News.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly cloudy in the overnight with some patchy fog forming, upper 20s and light winds. On Tuesday after the morning fog, we'll see some breaks in the clouds, highs reaching the lower 50s. Wednesday, plenty of cloud cover. It will be a little breezy, highs again in the lower 50s. It's 30 at our studios.
Celebrating 75 years.
We got something going here in Madison.
On the ice.
Shoots and scores again.
Against the boards.
He hangs on. Badgers kill off the major.
Between the pipes.
Redirect another fantastic stop.
This is Badger Hockey.
Shoots one, scores. Wow.
It's everything.
For the win, he shoots and scores.
Badger Hockey lives here.
Keep it going, baby.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Locally grown radio, your home for news, talk, and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by J.S. Bean Factory off Randolph Avenue in St. Paul. Only the good stuff keeps us awake.
I am awake. And hey, we're here with Dr. Stately. He is the president and executive officer at Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and does a great work for our community and speaks well and to everybody about what's happening here. And we really appreciate you having on. That's a kind of wrap up this segment because I think we could do a whole show on it. It's disheartening. I think it's disheartening too to see the movement of, like you said earlier, of these camps and spreading them out and have to start all over again. And there's so many moving issues and parts, and it's just one of the things I feel like is that the economy, when it is up on an upswing, really, it's lastly hits the upswing our BIPOC communities.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is like, you know, it is a very complex problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like most complex problems, there isn't going to be a silver bullet that just sort of kind of magically solves it. There's a lot of moving parts and a lot of parts that sort of like a lot of problems and challenges that have to be fixed, right? And find solutions for. Sometimes, it happens often, and it's not anyone's fault necessarily, I think, but government and systems, like, you know, these systems that serve us, whether they're housing systems or, you know, all these governmental entities, they're all parts of large systems that, you know, that are at work and make decisions based on regulations and laws that have been passed by, you know, legislators. And legislators oftentimes are not necessarily even the people that are the most knowledgeable about a particular issue or problem. They have to sort of listen to their constituents and or listen to other people who have expertise, who have their ear and can try to sort of, you know, give input into sort of solving a problem. And the problem is it is very, very complex. And, you know, and so finding a solution requires, like, you know, a tremendous amount of diligence and, you know, focus and, you know, but I do think one of the things that is not really talked about a whole lot, like in the state of Minnesota, and I think this is probably true just about anywhere in the United States, because I think, you know, we live within a country that is still deeply, deeply, you know, troubled and battled by, like, you know, racial inequity, racism, structural racism, which is, you know, like the air. It's like a fish living in a fishbowl, like, you know, with, you know, it takes work to look at it and see it and point it out, right? And, mm-hmm. You know, you need people to actually acknowledge that that's true as well. And we live in a time right now in American history, or in the United States history, where we are deeply divided across so many, in so many different ways. So what that means is, like, communities like Black and Indigenous communities who have historically been, you know, underinvested or disinvested in for decades, you know, we're not just talking a handful of years here, we're talking, you know, hundreds of years, you know, 50, 60, 70, or, you know, years or so, you know, so decades of, mm-hmm. like, intentional disinvestment in infrastructure and support for those communities. Like, we are at the bottom rung in practically anything you can measure socially, economically, health, you know, in terms of health, education. These things contribute to poor outcomes in all kinds of areas, and it contributes to sort of, like, you know, problems of this nature being intractable and not solvable, mm-hmm. because people are talking about the things that are easy to just point out. Oh, there's not enough money, or oh, housing prices are really high, and oh, this, you know, and not being able to say, like, these things are all related to the fact that, you know, we we haven't invested in these communities and these individuals or these people of color in a really long time. We've been actually eroded over the last 50, 60 years since the 60s. You know, a lot of the policies and a lot of the things that were put into place to protect and to support and move move us forward as an equitable society. You know,
right.
people get confused. They think equity and equality are the same thing, and those aren't the same thing.
Absolutely. And I think of, when you say that, I think of neighborhoods that were, freeways were put through and things like that, where there was strong community and intentional disbanding of the communities out there all over, well, the whole, all over Turtle Island, but here specifically in the Twin Cities too.
Yeah, and I think part of it is like, I mean, I've had conversations with people about this. I'll say things like, you know, Black and Indigenous people and other people of color, they live differently than white people do.
Mm-hmm.
Their primary sort of organizing principle and way of thinking of who they are as individuals and as members of families and communities and nations. Mm-hmm. Is a focus on group and group living and the importance of the entire community. That's a little bit different than sort of like the Western, you know, white American sort of model of like, you know, how to get ahead in society, right?
Right.
Focused on other kinds of things that are considered important. And the problem is that the whole, you know, so many of our laws and so many of our structures that are in place, you know, lean towards prioritizing and encouraging everybody to live, you know, in that sort of Western colonized model of pull yourself up by the bootstraps and, you know, don't help your neighbor, take care of yourself.
Right.
You'd be better off if you only took care of yourself and paid attention to you or the needs of your immediate family. And we just don't live that way. We don't think that way. And we think we have a different way of measuring health, wealth, and well-being than does the Western world. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we live within a system that doesn't value that. So
we're
disinvested in.
Right. What a really good point, too. Also, the push of suburbs and suburb living and, you know, outpricing, overpricing, getting away from the riff.
I read this really interesting article. I think it was a New York Times article. It might have been an Atlantic Journal article, but last week, and they were talking about how, in the 60s and 70s, white flight into the suburbs, you know,
right.
People leaving the inner city and, you know, going out to the suburbs to create suburb living. And, you know, and then over the last 20 years or so, like the investment we've made in encouraging Black and Indigenous and other people of color to move out of the inner city and move to suburbs, like have a better life out there where you get a house and a yard, you get a bunch of other things. And in some ways actually encouraging us to live more like white people. Right. Uh-huh. And then that happens. And this article talked about how like over the last 10 or 15 years, we've been seeing white people flee from those suburbs to, you know,
Brooklyn.
Well, to Brooklyn, I don't do Brooklyn, but like, you know, like places like, you know, like using a Minnesota analogy, would be like, you know, I'm not going to live in Bloomington and Edina anymore. That's, you know, it's getting a little too brown near me. And there's some other issues that come with that. I'm going to move out to, I don't know, like, you know, New Prague.
No, I get it.
And so these are phenomena that we see happening, you know, where people, rather than staying in place and trying to be civically engaged and solve problems and work collectively and collaboratively on solving problems, they escape, right?
Yep.
And in order to escape those kinds of conditions, you have to come from wealth or you have to have resources to do that. And we know that, you know, it is... You know, I was just telling my sons this the other day. It is really hard. It is really, really easy to become unrich very rapidly because rich is just like if you're getting paid a lot of money or for a short period of time, you can feel very rich. But wealth is generational. It is like wealthy people you know, their money makes money while they're sleeping. They couldn't become unwealthy if they tried.
Exactly.
Because the system is embedded, is structured to incentivize and support more wealth and wealth building. And so there's some real challenges and problems we have with this whole entire process.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. I mean, we see examples of that, whether it's the music industry or sporting industry or owners of sport teams. We see those examples all the time.
Yeah, and you know, you asked me a question before we went on break. You asked me, like, what can tribes do? And I think I see a lot of tribes being, you know, like, you know, Red Lake Nation is doing some really interesting stuff on their own homeland. They're building these enterprises and they're capitalizing on, you know, the opportunities to do things like open a dispensary. They didn't wait to ask for permission from the state or the feds to open a dispensary once marijuana became legal. They figured it out, and they're an independent nation, a sovereign nation. They can do that, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have to, as tribal people, we've always been really, really intelligent and smart. We're the original researchers on the planet. We mapped the stars 10,000 years before Galileo did. There isn't a problem we can solve when we put our minds together collectively to solve something, and we rely on the knowledge and experience of our ancestors, and we rely also on the creativity and the ingenuity of our young ones. They're the most creative, right? They can imagine. They haven't been hardened by life's experiences yet. They can imagine things that we can't imagine.
Yeah.
And so we have to bring all of that sort of together, along with our sort of like, and I see tribes bringing, you know, creating systems and bringing their people home and creating a sustainable life for them on their own tribal lands. And that's amazing. We need to do a little bit more of that, perhaps.
Wow, really good. Hey, we're with Dr. Stately here, and we're talking pretty heavy here. I'd like to probably wrap it up the next segment, maybe talk a little bit about the Electric Indian and what your thoughts were on the movie. And I know Haley was able to go there, and I had FOMO. I was in Madison, so I had big FOMO, and maybe I can get a screener from them. I don't know.
It's going to be in the film festival too, I think. In about a month.
Yep, that's right. I can't wait, though. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we're with Dr. Stately here, President, Executive Officer of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. We'll be right back.
Are you thinking about college? Consider checking out Minnesota Private Colleges. These 18 nonprofit institutions keep the focus on students with small classes and professors who will get to know you. You'll find students from all backgrounds, and no two colleges are alike. And when it comes to cost, they're more affordable than you think. Find the college that's right for you at mnprivatecolleges.org/possible. mnprivatecolleges.org/possible.
Become a teacher and ignite change. Join the St. Paul Urban Residency Program to become a teacher in just 15 months. You can earn your master's degree and teaching license from the University of St. Thomas while earning a $30,000 stipend, single health care, and dental benefits. As an added bonus, next year's cohort, all residents will receive $20,000 towards their tuition. Apply now. Applications due February 28, 2024. Visit spps.org/sutr.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1 U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Hey. Well, welcome back to Native Roots Radio, and we're here with Dr. Stately, and we're talking some heavy-duty stuff here. I'd like to switch topics here in the last segment and get your response on the Electric Indian, the Henry Boucher story that you and Haley were able to watch. I heard it was pretty emotional, and we all wish Henry was still here to see it.
Yeah, it was really remarkable. I was so happy to be there. It was I got to see the rough cut before, because they sent me out the link, and I think I told you that it's before it was color corrected. Felt like I was watching a movie from back in the 50s or 60s. expecting Billy Jack to jump on that.
Oh.
But it was really beautiful. It did an amazing job of kind of describing his life experience and his family and his values. He was just a remarkable human being. And, it's the thing, the incident that happened to him where he ended up losing his eye, damaging his eye and not allowing him never being able to play again. It's kind of it's really clear that game was here in Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
And I think it happened in the Edina rink, maybe.
Yeah, the Met Center, right where the Hall of America is now.
Yeah, or some Bloomington or Edina ritual. But anyway, it was really remarkable to me because it stood out. I've heard the story and things like that, but watching all of the lead up to that incident and happening, and it's he's having this amazing career, and he's just he's on fire. He's he could have, he had just in a very short period of time in his life, he had an amazing, career of just nothing that I really, I guess I would arguably say that I'm not the most knowledgeable about sports. I happen to be knowledgeable about hockey because I've had kids playing it for 12 years, I think. Just feels like forever. But he did achieve quite a remarkable amount of a level of achievement in a very short period of time in his life. And I think that, it was interesting that, that incident was clearly retaliation from the other player who had, was angry with him, right? Probably embarrassed, right? Because he kind of got his ass handed to him on the ice. Sorry, am I not allowed to say that?
You can't say that on NPR either, throwing that out there. Oh.
And, probably racially motivated, right?
Yeah.
In the early 70s, I think, right? So it's kind of and it was like, I remember that moment in the film where it was the county attorney, charged the other player with, assault, a criminal offense. Mm-hmm. And the jury, not surprisingly, the jury, probably all white jury too at that, right? Mm-hmm. Acquitted him, threw the case out.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is it's just, so we, I don't know, I hold that incident sort of in the same sort of other hand here. We have these you know, we have, you know, in a lot of ways we have, you know, we talked earlier segment about, like, you know, structural racism and the amount of sort of like, sort of turning the other cheek of justice systems and things like that, right? He was robbed of an amazing career because somebody was envious of his skills and his talent. And, you know, went after him on the ice, and, you know, I think right before that, Henry kind of knocked him to the ground, right? So,
right. I don't know if he saw double vision the rest of his life. Was that in the movie? If he was still seeing double vision, because he ended up suing the NHL. And what's amazing to me, Dr. Stately, is that he was done with hockey by the age of 28, and we still talk about him 50 years later.
Yeah.
How much legend and how much he gave back to his community, too.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he was still suffering from double vision. Like, when I got to spend like the day with him when my kids were with him shooting the B-roll footage for the film. And, you know, my experience of just visiting with him, he made me laugh. He was, you know, he had an amazing sense of humor. He reminded me a lot of, like, talking to my uncles, you know, growing up. You know, they just have, like, you know, that indigenous humor that's really sort of like, you know, not openly caustic, but sort of like, you know, he was so generous with his time. You know, he didn't just, you know, I had to ask him things about his life to have him talk to me about the things that he wanted. And he asked me about my kids first and how long have they been playing, and saw them skating. He was like, your sons are very good skaters, remarkable. You know, he was just a really wonderful, beautiful human being, and that sense of him came out, you know, right away when I was talking to him. Leah Hale, the director and producer of the film, when she was giving remarks at the end of the thing, she talked about how, you know, her experience of working with Henry on the movie was that He always had a way of making, you know, the other people in the room feel more important than him, right? Like, you were the center of attention when he was in the room and he was interacting with you. He didn't do a whole lot of, like, talking himself up. He talked to you and he wanted to know who you were. He made you feel like you were the most important person in the room. And that's certainly how I felt for those 2.5 or 3 hours I spent with him.
He kept
asking me to bandage his finger. He was on blood thinners because he had the heart condition, and he cut his finger, and he kept bleeding. There was like even shots of if you look closely in some of the B-roll film, you can see the blood on the ice. But he was like, "Your doctor, help me." And I was like, "I'm really not that kind of doctor. All I can do is just keep putting band-aids on it until you hold your hand up."
Well, Henry has a book too out there. Go, Henry Boucher, Ojibwe, Native American Olympian. We sold that autographed copies at Native Roots Trading Post and sold out every year that we.
You have one left, you said.
Yeah.
He's saving it.
Every year I look under my Christmas tree waiting to see if it's there, but it's never there.
Well, I don't celebrate Christmas because I'm all indigenous and stuff. JK, hey, but he was still really, really involved with I got to meet him with Clyde when they were working on the mascot stuff, and he was really involved with that, and he was a big name to be there, and been on the show many times, and I will miss him because we talked pretty frequently, and there's... Well, there's Haley, and I thought that was going to be Henry Boucher, but it was Dr. Stately.
Hey. We're practically twins, him and I. What are you talking about?
Yeah, same height. Hey, if you're listening to the show, you're part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It's the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office, vote, get vaccinated. Pini Gigi, Dr. Stately, for being on.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Connecting the dots between the left and the right. Rational Revolution with Chris Elfine. Saturdays at 2 on locally grown radio 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR and on the Civic Media app.
Fear you're missing out when you miss our conversations on air? You can always join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.